kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. We have another review show lined up for you. A lot of people going to be dropping by. We are starting things off. Royal Sefton, you are here. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing okay. Just trying to keep screens on my windows and try not to get blown down the street.
Always a good thing. Always a good thing. Not blowing away is always a positive.
Yes, I'm a fan of not blowing away. I don't like staying put if I can help it.
Always a positive. So how are things going for you?
Oh, dude, pretty well. Pretty well. I've had lots to do, so keeping very busy. How about you, man?
I want to put my head through a wall. I have an abscess tooth, and it hurts like a motherfucker.
Oh, no. I've been there. It's not fun. Yeah. I don't enjoy it.
So if I sound weird on this episode, it's because half of my face is swollen, and I'm doing what I can to sound normal, but a little bit of might come out. So.
Oh, I shouldn't laugh. I'm sorry, dude.
Hey, if you don't laugh, you cry, right?
That's right. That's my philosophy, man.
Yeah, I want to cry. It sucks. But we got some games to talk about. Are you excited for this?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
We are going to kick off the show talking about Sudden Strike 4 European Battlefields Edition, developed by Kite Games, published by Calypso Media, released June 26th on Xbox One for $39.99. The World War II real-time strategy heavyweight finally arrives on Xbox One. Sudden Strike 4 European Battlefield Edition offers fans the ultimate collection containing the main game, Sudden Strike 4, plus add-ons Battle of Kursk, Sudden Strike 4 Road to Dunkirk in Finland, Winter Storm, as well as three exclusive maps for Xbox One. Royal, tell us quick about this one.
Yeah. So this was kind of new territory for me, even though I know that it's obviously a very storied genre, a long-going series. And it's also the first time that I have done a game like this at all, any sort of RTS on a console. All of my rather admittedly limited RTS experience has been on the PC, so I was very concerned, how's this going to translate to pad control? And I have to say, it plays real well. So, you know, it takes place in the European portion of World War II. There's a German campaign, there's a Soviet campaign, there's an Allied campaign, as well as the add-ons you mentioned. Pretty massive. There's a lot to do in it, and you're very focused on, I think it's just all ground. Everything I played, it's all ground troops. Mm-hmm. You'll see planes flying overhead, but the focus is definitely on foot combat and artillery and vehicular assault, tanks and stuff. So, you know, you end up moving along and you have to gather your group using the right stick that I create this like circular selection. I'm used to like click dragging with a mouse, so it's the closest analog that you get with the console, and maybe that's old hat to other people who played console RTSs. Like I said, new to me, but it's fairly intuitive once you get the hang of it. Selecting the unit you need to get into place and move them along. And the game does a decent job of kind of holding your hand and getting you used to the plane mechanics. So a lot of it just has to do with holding your ground, crossing the river at the low points, or building a bridge if necessary. It's a lot about endurance and a lot about working through the ground campaign and not ceding ground to the enemy. So fairly action-packed. Most of my RTS experience admittedly is StarCraft. So this was a lot of new stuff to me, you know. Yeah, very, very pretty game, too. Kind of a hallmark with Calypso. It seems like as you zoom in, you get a lot of good detail. I thought it was a pretty good-looking game.
Yeah, I thought it looked great. I enjoyed the fact that, despite the fact that it is a slower, more strategic game, that once the action started going,
Yes, absolutely.
My soldiers were dropping like flies. My vehicles were getting blown up. Just everything negative that could happen to me was happening, and I was enjoying it.
Yeah, yeah, it's funny. War is hell, but, you know, from a bird's eye view, it's not so bad. And, you know, I was pleased with how sneaky sometimes the AI could be. You know, they definitely used cover to their advantage, and if you were to just drive down the road, you're in for a very unhappy surprise. So, you know, you got to strafe carefully. It presents a very fair challenge. In my estimation, and I dig that. Plus, I got to give props that they have Finland involved in this. I have some extra familial ties to Finland. It's kind of neat to see that represented as well as one of the lesser known parts of the World War II campaign.
Nice. Yeah, there's a lot of content in this game. I was surprised with how much is there. I know that it includes all the add-ons and stuff like that. There's like something like 30 missions to play, something crazy like that.
Yeah, full disclosure, I couldn't get through them all. There's just a bunch of stuff to do,
and they're long too. Those missions could get long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is definitely not the kind of game you just pick up and play for 5 minutes at a time. Much more involved than all that. And I guess, you know, if you're going into an RTS, you should expect that. You obviously have your objective, and the objective can be fairly involved because it'll adapt as you go. Oh, I can't actually do this now. I can't cross the bridge because the bridge got blown up. Okay, time to change what I'm going to do. So, yeah, it's a much more involved game than some of the more arcadey style games that I'm used to reviewing. And that was a nice change up too, I suppose.
A lot of replay value as well, where each of the stages you could earn up to 3 stars. Once you do get 3 stars, it unlocks a more challenging version of the map.
Correct.
Each of them have 3 different, what are they, doctrines, the commanders that you pick, whether defense, attack, or support.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, the stars you earn through all the missions could be used to unlock upgrades to replay them. So if you didn't get 3 stars, it makes it easier to get 3 stars once you've played a couple of missions and you've earned those extra perks.
Yep. Yep. It's definitely, you know, one of those games that you're in for a penny, you're in for a pound. There's a lot of stuff to do, to acquire and to unlock. So I think it really, yeah, you haven't heard that? In for a penny, in for a pound. I love that one.
Yeah, that's the first time I heard that. I like that.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, if you think of your games as like a time investment or something that rewards you for your patience and perseverance, this is that kind of game, absolutely.
Do you have any gripes with the game? Because I had a couple of minor gripes. I do wish things moved a bit quicker. The missions are meant to be slower and more methodical and strategic, but sometimes I wish the movement was a little bit faster.
Yeah, the pace is kind of feast and famine. It's very sporadic. So, you know, all hell will be breaking loose at one point if you drive right into a trap or something. But, yeah, getting your units to move along, it can feel like a bit of a trudge. And to that end, I kind of felt like there were some issues with vehicular pathfinding. Like you pick your destination, it might not always go the way you'd want it to. Like on its way there, has a tendency to get a little roundabout. Mm-hmm. It's kind of weird. And yeah, it's such a minor thing, but some of the voice acting is a little awkward. I think part of it is, you know, playing in the German campaign, and they sound very, their accent doesn't sound German until they actually start using German words. Something about it just felt a little off to me. Minor gripe. I didn't really think that was that important.
Only other real gripe that I had is that sometimes troop selection could be a little, I don't know, bitchy.
Yes. You know, actually, come to think of it, one of the things I had the hardest time with was not only selecting repair vehicles, but getting them to actually do their damn repairs. Get them in range, and then I wouldn't be able to get them to repair for some reason. And I think that, you know, while they did a great job of making the controller work in a genre that I'm used to, at least, and I assume others too, used to playing with a keyboard and a mouse. But I did have problems with that sometimes. That's true.
Yeah, overall, though, for a cheaper price than the original launch, plus the fact that it includes the DLC, I think it's a hell of a value for what's there. And anyone looking for a solid yet somewhat slow-paced RTS on console, I give it a solid try it. Now, if only I could suck less at the game.
Yes, there is that. How much is it going for?
It is $39.99.
Okay, yeah, no, for $40, you're getting a lot of stuff. Yeah, so
I believe it was originally $50 when it launched on PS4, And then mm-hmm. it includes all the paid DLC, so.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that's an excellent price, considering just how much there is to do in this game and how much you're going to get out of it. Yeah, I'm with you on this. I think it's definitely a try it, because there are definitely going to be a couple things that aren't perfect about it, of course, and it really depends on if it's really your play style.
Yeah, of course, but console RTS is a fairly niche genre, so.
Yeah, that's really what it reduces to. That may not float everybody's boat, but if you get used to the controls and everything, it's very rewarding.
And there's a lot to do, which is always good.
Mm-hmm.
A lot to do and a lot of ways to do it. But other game that you're here to talk about is called Ghost 1.0, developed and published by Unepic Fran, released July 11th on Xbox One, July 12th on Switch for $9.99. A mysterious agent capable of becoming a digital ghost sneaks aboard the Nakamura space station. This is where the fun begins, as my cat walks in front of my screen and blocks what I'm reading. The station is well protected with its heavy defenses, never-ending arsenal of weapons, and mysterious artifacts. It will all have to be destroyed. Royal, tell us about this one.
Sorry. trying to breathe. Yeah, so Ghost 1.0, it's cute. It's kind of a tongue in cheek sort of game, the way that it plays out, especially the way the story is delivered. You climb aboard this orbiting, space station dealy, where you're trying to hijack some advanced, AI technology. You send in this android looking character as Ghost. And you get your commands from a couple guys on the ground, and referred to collectively as Houston, as you come to find out, it's, you know, these two guys that are in way over their heads. very, very fun voice acting throughout the game. Good sense of humor. And as you climb aboard the ship, it's kind of built as a Metroidvania, kind of a roguelite. I'm still a little confused on some aspects of how it really juggles both, but you have a few settings you set at the beginning as to how much of a roguelite you want it to be. Mm-hmm. And as you progress, you start to get these energy cubes, and you can trade them for different weapons and add-ons. And as you proceed through this space station, this kind of maze-like space station, you come across different terminals that unlock, or not unlock, they alert enemies to your presence, and there are different alarm levels that kind of translate to a numerical representation of how difficult that room's going to get. And as you come back, that number will begin to increase. So, you know, you want to reduce the amount of backtracking you have to do as you play forward. And the enemies kind of vary from different turrets that also have repair bots looking after them to AI maids that carry guns. It's kind of interesting. So, you know, it's definitely in that vein of Metroidvania, and as you unlock more items, it starts to get a little more Symphony of the Night in that sense, how you end up with this huge cache of weapons that you just get to pick from. Unfortunately, as soon as I died and I restored, I would lose all the stuff I acquired, which was painful. Yeah. And the game has definitely a sometimes very abrupt learning curve. You might feel it's pretty easy going into it, and then you just get your ass handed to you. And especially at the higher alarm levels, when they start just dropping everything on you at once. Part of the difficulty for me was the controls. So it's kind of like a, go ahead.
I was going to say, they're not bad controls. They're just awkward for the genre.
Yes. Awkward. Exactly. And I can see, you know, some of the advantages of it. It kind of plays like a twin stick side scroller. So mm-hmm. you've got motion on the left stick, and you've got aiming on the right stick. And, you know, the cool thing is, I mean, like, you can retreat and shoot in the opposite direction or even a diagonal as you're retreating, which I thought was really cool. I can see what they're going for there. But it still feels a little weird, and the jump button is mapped to left trigger, which also felt really weird to me.
Yeah.
I kept wanting to press like A to jump, and mm-hmm. that just broke me. I had the hardest time getting used to that. So I feel like the challenge was inflated a little bit by just trying to adapt to that control scheme. Yeah, that was probably the roughest thing about the game, frankly. It wasn't just that it was sometimes more difficult than I would have anticipated, it was harder to control than I would have wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah, it kind of reminded me of, what the heck was this thing called? When Half-Life 2 was first released, this is taking it way back, there was something like Operation Freeman or something. It was a side-scroller where you use the mouse to aim and the WASD to walk around in the side-scroller. Just bizarro, and I never quite got used that control scheme. It's basically the same thing translated to a pad.
Interesting.
Yeah, not recommended either. But you know, it once you get used to it, the game is still quite playable. And it has a really cool gimmick, the ghost gimmick, shall we say. And maybe even calling gimmicks a little insulting. It's not a gimmick per se, but your character can essentially leave this android body, and then you can possess an enemy. And when you possess... I fell off the recording. Sorry about that.
I was going to say, what the hell happened?
When you possess
the enemy, were ghosted. Oh my God, you were just ghosted.
Somebody ghosted me. so when you ghost the into an enemy body, the other enemies all pick up on the fact that you just possess them, and they turn immediately hostile. So you don't really have quite the stealth component to this that you might hope for, but it also allows you to defer attention away from you and toward an enemy unit. You know, draw fire and even use their weapons, or more importantly, you can also use it to work with terminals and other things to unlock doors and so on. Because your ghost form can pass through obstacles that you in your android body cannot. And so it's a clever game the way it's implemented, just with a few stumbling blocks and a few difficulty bits here and there that I think could have been mitigated, I think, with friendlier play control.
Yeah, and you mentioned it before, but I think the game is hilarious. It's got a very human sense of humor to it, where it doesn't feel overly scripted. It feels something natural that we would say to each other.
Right, yeah. No, the dialogue is really well written. It's fun to listen to. It's very lighthearted and comical, and it really could have gone in another much more self-serious direction. And I think the game is made a lot better for it by having that human element, that kind of whimsical writing.
Yeah.
So it was a good laugh.
I love how it explains away some of these tropes that you would find in games, like a save station where it's like, oh, well, if you die, we could replicate your android body at this station because you were scanned in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, basically a big 3D printer, and it just creates a new body for your ghost to possess. Mm-hmm. Which I thought that was pretty clever. You know, you don't have to write, we go back in time or something completely absurd like that. So yeah. I thought that was pretty cool too. I do have to mention, in addition to not really caring for the controls, there's also a little bit of animation awkwardness. It looks kind of like a lot of the bodies are, they're sort of like floating appendages on a torso. Maybe I'm a little spoiled by just what some of the bigger studios can do in terms of animation, but it just kind of looks like they're sort of tweening the position of the limbs and letting them swing around. So things just look a little bit kind of, I'm trying to think of the right word, but it's just a little uncanny, I think. Mm-hmm. Watching the characters walk around and stuff, and that's a minor criticism. You know, you don't really think much about this stuff when you're actually in the thick of it. It's just getting used to the visual aspect of the game. It's good art, so animation.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Well, overall, $10 on this one. What do you think of it?
Oh, $10 is a great price for it. You know, I would say you could even go 20 and still have plenty to do with this game.
Don't give them ideas. So, don't give them ideas.
I know. That's dangerous. What my point is, at $10, it's damn near an insta-buy. I mean, there are the awkward controls, or at least in my view, they're pretty awkward. And you know, maybe you don't care for a roguelite. You want something that has a very fixed path, very rigid, more Super Metroid, more Castlevania Symphony of the Night. You won't get that here necessarily. But yeah, totally. For $10, there's so much game here, and it is a lot of fun. So I think that's a great price.
Awesome. I agree with you. I think it's well made. It's really fun and funny to experience the story. And I love how they explain away the tropes. I that was one of my favorite bits of the game.
Definitely.
And just, yeah, no, it's self-referential.
Yep. Yeah, it breaks the fourth wall a little bit. So good stuff.
Gotta love it. Oh, man. Well, Royal, it is always good having you on chatting about this stuff. Do you have any final thoughts to wrap that up?
Yeah, stay dry and stay indoors.
All right, moving on. We are being joined by our good friend, Pernell Vaughn. Pernell, how are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. How about yourself, sir?
Besides the tooth thing, you know, doing all right, I guess.
Yeah, honestly, given the state of that, that's the best one can do, which is unfortunate. But let's cross our fingers that it blows by in due time, and this will be a jokey of my memory a month or less from now.
Oh, yeah. I love joking about my face being half swollen.
Well, in past tense, it ends up being funny, but in present tense, it's always awful. Looking True. Back on something, it's like, oh, that time, remember? Oh, what a laugh. And by laugh, I mean, man, it hurt. I mean, I tell stories now, like, yeah, remember that time where you fell and your knee landed on top of a brick and you had to hobble home and then get crutches? That was hilarious at the time.
Man, that does sound fun.
It was a freaking blast, and I still had to go to school with the crutches, because that's what a champion did. You know, just, hey.
I don't know if I ever told this story on the show before, but when I was in 7th grade, I ended up playing volleyball in gym class, and this one kid fell on my ankle and, like, Ooh. Just fucked it up bad. Like, I'm on the ground screaming, crying. They end up getting me in a wheelchair and taking me over to the hospital, which thankfully wasn't too far away. But, you know, my mom has to come to school and pick me up while I'm being wheeled out in a wheelchair so that we could go over to the hospital and get an x-ray taken of my foot. Fast forward to the next day, they have me on pain pills, which I didn't know you're supposed to take with food.
Mm.
And so, in math class, the medicine got to my stomach and I just projectile vomited all over the girl in front of me.
Oh, see what I mean? Now it's hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, I'm sure it was freaking awful.
So back-to-back days, I'm being wheeled out in a wheelchair. Second day, covered in vomit, which was, you know, a nice confidence builder for me, being the shy, nerdy kid in school, throwing up on a girl in math class while the entire school gets to laugh at you. That was fun.
But then just tell people, you think you're a projectile. You think you can vomit projectile like? Come talk to a pro, baby. I do it right.
I think I bark on nobody's business. I think I stayed home from school for 2 weeks after that until my ankle was feeling better and I had the courage to actually go back and show my face in school again.
And then what happened? It was like, oh, welcome back, friend. And you're like, yay.
I apologized profusely and the math teacher just stood up when he saw me in class, grabbed the trash can and set it next to me and walked away.
See? He was like, here you go. Just be careful where you launch that shit, okay, buddy?
You want to know what I did in those 2 weeks?
Video game.
God damn right I played video games, because that's what we're here to talk about.
Okay, I got to give you that. That's a segue, or a segue into another story there.
I try.
Do what you do.
You and I, we got 3 games to talk about. We're going to start things off. You gave a preview of it last week on the show. Now you're going to give it your full stamp of approval review with Insane Robots, developed and published by Planiac, released July 10th on PS4, 12th on Steam, 13th on Xbox One for $19.99. Fight to the death in this unique card battler, compete in intense one-on-one duels, lead a riotous robot rebellion through randomly generated survival arenas, overthrow a malevolent robot despot in this epic 15-hour single-player campaign. Insane Robots is card battling hacked. Pernell, tell us about this one.
So, for the most part, the way this game functions is that you are a robot who, for reasons that he does not recall, is thrust into a rather colorful hexagonal arena where he is tasked by some faceless overseer to kill other robots who are also stuck in the same environment. And why did they get sent there? Apparently because they asked questions such as which way to the bathroom, or, you know, how does my bladder go there? I don't know. Whatever. Point is, they ask dumb questions or normal questions and get sent to the scrap yard for battle tone. And what that means for the player is a great deal of entertainment and fun. Because, aside from the fact that you get some fun dialogue scenes between your robot and a weird diamond quipper who is supposedly informed about more than he lets on, you have to pretty much engage in combat. And the combat in this game is actually kind of enjoyable. it works, like you said earlier, like a card battle system. Wait, well, actually, before I even get into that, I should describe the environment. So the story mode or main campaign of the game consists of a series of stages, campaigns, if you will, where you are tasked with taking on a variety of different arenas. Each level will give you a multiple set that you have to complete in order before you complete that actual campaign. And it kind of randomizes both the stage and the condition and the terrain. So one level might be a grassy knoll where it's pretty much hazard-free and relaxing. And the other one might be, say, an ice level with a little bit of slip and slide and a fog of war situation that will prevent you from seeing all around you as far as like enemies are concerned until they're right up in your face, punch you in the gut. I'm sorry, robo-gut. So when you're on the actual map, you can walk around and there's a number of like on-map events that can occur. You might come across a bag of loot on the ground, which will present you with, I guess they're bolts in this game, send you with a bunch of bolts, which can be used as currency at the store to purchase various upgrades for your robot. Other times you might come across a sort of like quick time scenario, not a quick time, but a sort of story-based scenario where, like, say, for example, a scrap robot is lying on the ground crying out in pain. Why, oh, why? I don't know, did I watch that marathon of Merit with, you know, with viruses or something? I don't know. And you are tasked with, what do you want to do? Do you want to help the poor robot or beat him up and take his loot? And stuff like that. And then usually, of course, you make a decision and it can lead to a variety of outcomes, whether it be a battle or a nice cash reward or coordinate to another event somewhere else on the map. But the important part is, and the thing I like, is that they're all kind of little unique snippet events that you can kind of undertake and sort of choose your own adventure for a potential game. Sort of fun. Now, the main component of the game is when another robot comes upon you on screen. This initiates combat. And combat in this game is actually kind of cool. What ends up happening is you are thrown into a sequence where you and the other robot are sort of going left to back to forth in like in a sort of turn-based situation. And on those turns, you are given a number of, I guess I'll call them chips, and your robot has a number of chip slots. 2 for attack, 2 for defense, 1 for boost. And what you have to do is equip chips for those different slots. How to explain this? Okay, so the defense slots of 2, there's a line connecting them. The same for the 2 attack slots with a line, a bunch of, with 2 of them with a line connecting them. In order to engage in an attack, you have to have an attack chip, each attack chip having a certain amount of power associated with it. You have to have that chip locked into a slot, both of those slots, so that they form a circuit. And as long as you have the circuit formed and you have the AP points to initiate combat, you can strike against the opponent. And when this is done, damage is determined by the amount of power in your 2 attack chips minus the amount of defense in the opponent's 2 linked defense chips. And just to confirm and clarify, if you do not have your defense circuit completed, your defense chips don't do anything and you're just a sitting duck a suck.
So, get your shit wrecked.
Oh, yes, you do. This game emphasizes overkill bonuses. So, if anything, they expect people to get overkill shot, and same for you potentially getting overshot. So, how do you get around the situation? Is it just simply a matter of attack and defense? Oh, God, no. If it was that simple, well, this would be a pretty simple game. And that is not how that goes. So, in addition to just basic attack and defense chips, you have a variety of alternate effect chips. You might find a chip that will allow you to swap a locked slot chip with another slot chip that the opponent is using. So if you see an attack of 5 on him, you have an attack of 1, drop that swap in there. Now it's yours. Or, hey, you might want to randomize the amount of power that a chip is giving you. And there's like a number of randomizer chips where the power of the randomizer determines the how likely the odds will be in your favor. So a 5 power randomizer means it's very likely that you're going out with a 4 or 5 power. If it's looking at a 2, yeah, I wouldn't use it on myself. But thankfully, you can use the randomizer on your opponent, too. So you can definitely screw them over with random stats. And there's so many other ones. There's cash bonuses where if you equip it, you'll get more money after the end of or bolts at the end of a fight. There are ones that will boost your actual energy out, your AP gain in the combat sequence, and so on and so forth. And lastly, you can even take certain chips and combine them into new chips. One likely example being if you take 2 defense chips with the same battery power, you know, attack power, defense power, and combine the two, you'll probably get a chip that gives you both attack and defense, and you can choose where you want it to go, which can be nice if you're in a situation where you don't know whether you're going to need to have an attack ready or defense ready. Good to have that on sequence. So ultimately, you're taking these chips, you're battling out against the opponent enemy, with the goal being to knock them the fuck out. And if you do, you get chips. And if you knock out every robot on the map, you likely survive and win. And the opponents are actually attacking each other at times, too. They're not just coming after you. This is a free-for-all beatdown fest. So if you want right rewards, you might be in your best interest to try to get to the enemies before they get to each other, because you want to beat them and get all the money that they drop off. So one last thing worth mentioning on the map is that you can take all that delicious, delicious bolt cash you find and come across stores that are located on the map. Now, you can't purchase the actual chips in combat. Surprisingly and weirdly enough, they are completely randomized and determined by the game. You don't choose what chips you get. However, you can acquire different augmentations, or I guess like stat buffs that the robot can get. You can equip a chip, for example, that might make it more likely for you to get defense-based chips than attack-based chips, and vice versa. You might be able to equip something that will allow you to get a little bit more hit points in combat than the other robots might get. Just a lot of different modifiers that you can use to kind of customize your robot to suit your best interest. With my favorite so far still, even though I got it early in the game, there's a harmonizer, which means that if you equip two chips with the exact same power level, the actual output of them is stronger because they harmonize with each other. La, la, la. So it ends up being a good time trying to, you know, get the right buffs and work them to the way you want to play the game so that you can play chips the way you want to play them. So it is weird in that due to the fact that chips aren't determined by you, you can't really pull a Yu-Gi-Oh! And just start saying, I want to put a bunch of attack chips in there and go all offensive and see what happens. You got to go with what the game gives you. But that in itself is the game. And you learn to work with it in order to enjoy it. And I feel as though this game is pretty enjoyable.
Yeah, I know last week on the show you gave definitely something to keep an eye on with your preview. So I want to know, $20 on this final game, what do you think of it?
Honestly, if you got $20 and you're looking for something unique and slightly a bit different, I'd give it a buy. Though, more so a try it if you're on a budget, because who knows, you can't guarantee this will be your cup of tea. But for me, I think it's definitely on the buy it side, because it's unique, it's funny, it's quippy, you can unlock different robots with different default stat buffs. It's just a good time.
Sounds good. I know there is also a deluxe edition of the game for, I believe, $32.99 that includes 6 upcoming DLC packs. So that might be something to keep an eye on as well if you're interested in the game.
I might have to look into that thing, because since I got this for the review, maybe I can go out and grab that DLC.
I'm guessing there's going to be a season pass to cover it for like $15, something like that. That's my guess.
I think hopefully we'll be able to get some info on what the DLC will consist of. Though, for all we know, maybe it's listed on the game's actual page or something.
Yeah, I didn't pay enough attention. I got to fix that.
Hey, sometimes about the game itself, DLC should come later after you've experienced the game itself.
Indeed.
So, no harm there.
Indeed. Well, next game to talk about is called Tour de France 2018, developed by Cyanide Studio, published by Focus Home Interactive, released June 28th on Xbox One and PS4 for $49.99. Embody the greatest champions and hit the official track of the Tour de France 2018. Enjoy all the intensity of this legendary race, attack, follow the best trajectories, carry out the finest racing tactics to lead your team to victory and earn the mythical yellow jersey. Pernell, what is this game?
Weird. So I have never played a game like this before. If you were to say, hey, Pernell, what is the closest you have come to a bike racing game? I would probably tell you, what was that game from back in the day? ESPN Extreme Games on the PlayStation 1, back when the system first came out.
I thought you were going to say Paperboy.
Oh, that would have been pretty sneaky. No, but I've at least played a game where you do race on a bike. I just haven't played one quite like this. So the way this works is that you are a bike racer. You are tasked with getting from the beginning of a race to the end of a race. Sometimes in a tour, which is a series of stages that you have to engage in to get the highest ranking. But what ends up happening is this isn't a traditional game where you just, you know, hold down A to bike and then brake and whatever. The way this game works is your biker has a stamina gauge, and you have to actually kind of control the pedaling by kind of either A, holding down the bike pedal button, or rhythmically pressing it to keep it within a certain range in order to conserve the energy that he is outputting while he rides his bike. And depending on the terrain you are riding on, which comes in a variety of forms, whether it be a flat road or a mountain pass or a rocky ravine, not a pit, a rocky road, just go with that. Depending on what you're riding on, it'll have different effects on the biker's stamina that he needs to output in order to get from point A to point B. It might be a little bit more draining for him if he's riding uphill, for example. So what you end up having to do is kind of pace yourself, bike, slow down, and so on and so forth. If you are coming into a turn that is like if you're trying to do a turn and you take the turn a little bit too sharply, you'll outright just not be able to pull off. I never really got to the point where wiping because I was too scared to try that. I was overly cautious, which is why I kind of just did a lot more failing than succeeding. But you basically cannot just speed into a turn. You have to actually stop pedaling or gauge between the pedaling and the brakes in order to give your bike a bit of enough of a slowdown in order to cut into a turn. So you have to be mindful of that. You can't just hold down acceleration to go. And the beautiful thing also is there's another button that you can press where you can kind of aggressively pedal, and it's called attacking. You basically kind of, like, if you've ridden a bike in the past where you get up and you're not sitting on the seat and you're kind of pressing down really hard on the pedals and letting your legs extend outward, that is considered attacking in this game. And that extends from a completely different energy meter called the attack gauge. And one thing I thought was pretty interesting about this game compared to other racing games is that you don't just play it in this manner. And you don't necessarily just let your energy come back on its own. You actually get the ability to have items that you can consume, which will allow you to actually regain some of your stamina. It's a really odd premise to a racing game, in my opinion. You'll be riding, you'll see your stamina is low, and you happen to have some like gel meal in your pocket, and you can press the button to kind of pedal on a bit of a coasting and start drinking it, which will regain your stamina. Obviously, you can't play aggressively while you are doing this, so you have to be willing to play in a situation where you get enough of a spot where you don't have to really feel too concerned about if anyone's catching you or not, and take that time to sit back and, enjoy your freshly packed goo.
And the beauty with the game is that it isn't always just about being out front. It is a very strategic game where you kind of got to play the middle of the pack sometimes and just coast and follow some other people, draft behind them, conserve your energy, and you kind of want to save up for the last bit of the race. So it's definitely not just an attack all the time kind of game. It's a very strategic kind of racing game.
And I genuinely like that very much. And I guess that's also where your teammates can come in too, because you can kind of piggyback off. I should mention that there's teams. You're not just riding by yourself sometimes. Mm-hmm. There are times you'll be racing with a pack of other racers. And when that is the case, you will essentially be able to draft behind your other teammates sometimes and bump off of them. Or you can have kind of play to a situation where you want one of your other teammates to do the majority of the work or save their stamina for the end of the race. So for example, you might be the person whose job it is to kind of give the other teams a run for the money, kind of be up in their face and constantly riding up alongside them so they can't just coast freely. And then once they're all winded dealing with you, the guy you let kind of ride easy in the back just shoots on by like the tortoise with gel in his pocket. Take it all home. It's an interesting dynamic in and of itself how that works, because you have to, depending on what mode you're in, you actually can even create the team. Like, you can draft a team of players to determine, who you want to race with and how you want to do it. And they all come with their own stats that you can play around with. Well, not necessarily play around with, but you can use those stats to determine who your team is going to be. There's recovery time, which is the ability for them to get health back after they've ridden a little bit. You can gauge how well they ride on different terrains. Like, you might have a guy who's great riding on a mountain pass, but he's actually terrible riding on flat terrain. Yes, I made that up, because seriously, how would someone be good at riding on mountain terrain but not be good on riding flat terrain? I'm sure the game created it, but I don't understand how that could freaking work. It's flat. You can't do poorly. Though, I guess you kind of could, because due to the whole braking to steer bit, maybe it's like, well, since mountains require me to, pace myself harder, it's easier for me to deal with turns and crap. Whereas flatland, I just ride off of ravines. I ride off into the ledges all the time. I'm just diving the cliffs. Whatever. I'm a terrible biker on flatland. But the important part is you can gauge how you want to build up your guys. And best of all, there are different types of races too. Whereas in a lot of games, time trials are just a thing you do as a side mode. In this game, sometimes time trials are a part of the actual tour. Whereas one level might be race against this other team. Another might be just see who can get the best time out of all the teams, like get a collective time or whatnot. Everybody rides together and see how long it takes to beat the course. In which case, sometimes you might want guys who suck at racing but are great at riding in time trials. So lots of weird components that can be utilized to best build a team of racers to go at it. It's essentially like you and like one other guy or two other guys, depending. But it's a great time to actually sit there and kind of come up with that. And again, it feels different compared to a typical racing game. And it is even something that I think a lot of other companies may be looking into in the future. Like I know there's a Sonic racing game coming out later that's going to do the same thing where you have other teams and they have to work together to get a good time on a track too. So Tour de France did it first. I don't know. But what about you? What is your thought on this product so far?
My thought is I've covered it a couple years ago. I've kind of enjoyed getting new people in to get their take on it every year. It feels like it's the game that I've enjoyed in the past. My biggest hurdle with this year's game is despite all the content that's there, because you could create your own races. They have a bunch of different races that you could unlock. There's a lot of content in the game. My concern is that $50 price tag, because in the past you've been able to get them for $20 or $30. And this year being at $50, it's just such a big mental block for me to really get behind this version of the game. That said, it is a good looking game. I really enjoy how many character models can be on the screen at one time. And they're all individual character models as well. It's not just like copy and pasted sprites. It's a really well detailed game and it's really enjoyable. I'm just concerned about that price tag.
Do you feel like maybe the content may justify the price tag? Like even though they give you, even though they make you pay out the nose for it compared to older other releases, they said, hey, we may have, you know, done a little bit more to make it worth your while.
I think there's enough content there to justify the price tag. I just, after seeing it at lower prices for so many years, it's just in my own mind where I have a hard time accepting this new higher price tag. It's like when a series that you've known and loved has games come out at $10 a whole bunch, and then out of nowhere, all of their games go up to $15. It's just that mental hurdle that you've got to get over. I know next year is probably going to be another $50 game, and from then on, we're going to see the games come out at $50. It's just a jarring change to go from 30 to 50 in 1 year.
Yeah, I can understand that, which is unfortunate because, quite frankly, when you're used to something costing being at a rather affordable price, to see other stuff come up is like, are they doing it for the content? Are they doing it just because they've seen other games pull off that price tag and they want a little piece of the pie themselves? But
maybe
it's like, it's hard to rein that back in, because maybe the game was always worth that much. We don't know. But what we do know is it was priced at that price point at some point in time.
No.
So it's a brute.
You're the important opinion here. So $50 on this one as a new player to the series, what do you think of it?
I think it's at least worth a try. And furthermore, if it's a person who's A, never tried this game before and has an affinity for racing titles and is okay with paying, you know, a typical pricing for like other sim sports games, like say the football games or things of that nature, I think it's definitely more on the buy it side, but it's worth trying at least because again, it is not a typical racing style game if you're not used to playing this kind of stuff, because I've been playing games for ages. And I can't recall playing a racing game that worked like this before.
My other question for you is, I told you beforehand, before you got the game, that everyone who's covered it before came out pleasantly surprised at the game, and it surprised them in being a lot better than they would have expected a Tour de France game to be. Do you feel the same way?
I would have to say yeah, because I expected it to be like a little rinky-dink budget title that was like, hey, bike racing, no one's going to buy this game, so we'll just slap a bunch of, you know, cheesy voices in it and maybe like an intro song that we pulled out of a cereal box or whatever. But there's a lot of customization going on here. There's a lot of attention to detail. It's a nice title. Like, it is a good game that I feel I would want to play more of. And it doesn't hurt that I'm a big fan of a racing game called Flamme Rouge, which has a similar function. It plays similar to how this game does, in that, you know, you have a team of racers and the goal is to, you know, have one of your racers get to the finish line first, you know, so that's the same logic. So it's like, hey, we're all working together for a common cause. What is that common cause? Being the first to wrap this course up.
Well, I am happy to hear that you were surprised and pleasantly surprised by how enjoyable the game can be. I hope every year I can turn someone else new onto this game, because I still enjoy them every year.
Yeah, and honestly, like I said earlier, just worth pointing out, other racing games take note. Wouldn't it be kind of cool if you had a racing game where you had to, I don't know, ride along with another person and tear it up, get through it? Or rather have two racers work together instead of just being one man flying El Dolo? I think it would be different. I know, because I'm playing it right now.
Well, that said, you got one more game to talk about tonight, and that is
I do!
Yes, you do. Assault Gunners HD Edition.
I kid because I love.
I hope you remember the game.
Well, this is going to lead to my review in and of itself, but go for it.
But yes, Assault Gunners HD Edition, developed by Honey Parade Games, published by Marvelous Entertainment, released July 5th on the Switch for $9.99. Assault Gunners HD Edition puts you in control of the peacekeeping force known as DAT. Along with your three allied battle mechs, you must attempt to save Earth's migrants and the Mars colonies as a whole from the threat of the Ants Uprising. Who or what could be leading this threat against Mars and the new planned perfect utopia for humanity? Purnell, who's leading the threat?
Not me, because I didn't feel like it.
this game?
So it's basically a mech combat game, which, funny enough, is not all that common on the Switch in this world of multi, you know, surprise releases and indie dev flooding on the Nintendo eShop. This is probably the first mech game, maybe the second, because there was that one we reviewed a few months ago, I think. But this is one of the first mech games to make an appearance on the Switch. And the gameplay isn't half bad. So the way it works is you are dumped into a series of missions where you are commanding the other three robots, but you are controlling the main robot. So you run out into a field. The game might give you a series of objectives like clear the environment of enemies, or, you know, set up radio signals in these different sections of the map, or take down this giant mech boss, things of that nature. And you are tasked with, you know, performing those things. Your robot has a shoulder weapon, a main weapon, and a sub weapon, which are activated all by pressing the R button. But to determine which of those guns you want to use, you have to press the corresponding face button that's linked to them. So if you want to use your shoulder armament, you have to press the X button and then the trigger to fire it. And weirdly enough, there's a melee attack that functions the exact same way. Whereas I feel like I wouldn't mind so much if the different sub-weapons were, you know, selected and then used. But I think the melee weapon should just always be available at the press of a button. Because you'll be firing, you might be like, crap, I'm in a clutch, I'm out of ammo. Just punch the guy. You want to switch and go ahead and switch, push the switch button just to activate it. You want to just smack the guy in the face. But whatever, I digress. So that's basically how combat works. There's also a dash function that is linked to your shield. And what I mean by that is you have a base hit point meter, which they call energy meter in this game. And in addition to that, you have a shield meter. If you take damage and you still have shield, your shields will deplete. And once your shield is completely depleted, you'll start taking energy damage. However, if you start using the dash button, which is the left trigger to boost, you'll drain the shield, which I get how that would work from a strategic standpoint. It makes sense to say, hey, you know, got to conserve. Don't got to be mindful of how often you dash and how often you block. But at the end of the day, your mech walks kind of slowly. And I'm not dashing to evade. I'm dashing because I want to get crap done. So I never had shield. I just dashed everywhere. And when it ran out, I was just stuck walking until the boost came regained and then did it again. So admittedly, there is equipment, which I'll get into in a bit, that allows you to increase that stat to get more boost. But I wish it was more so suited to just say, hey, let's have these two features be separate and let me dash how the heck I want. You know, kind of like how Virtual On does it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Virtual On, you can't dash infinitely, but you can dash enough that you can keep some good momentum going. Your teammate mechs, they pretty much kind of go off and blast like crazy. You can't outright tell them what to do. Like, you can't say, go to that location. But what you can do is give them three different commands, or four different commands. You can send them on the attack, which means they'll just attack other guys around to help you out defensively, whereas they are more so following, and they're firing only when needed. They don't go off on their own to take out guys. They're kind of sticking together in formation. There's standby mode, which will allow them to kind of just hunker down in a spot until you tell them to go otherwise, like in like another location. And there's outright just hold, where it's like, don't do anything. Just be stupid. I don't know why I would ever want them to do that, but that's just the game. So as you progress, there is no money in this game. You might be asking yourself, how do you upgrade your guys if there's no money? And the answer to that is random drops. So as you take out enemies on different maps, they'll drop power-ups. Sometimes it'll be an item that says, hey, 25% shield regeneration, or everybody in your squad gets a 25% stamina boost, or anything like the number of those sorts of things. But other times, you might also, or also ammo, because of course you need ammo for your armaments. But sometimes you'll actually also get just, I guess I call them, just call them parts. And when you beat the level, the game, every level has a series of, a number of different parts that can be found on the map, and you might find them in these drops. And at the end of every stage, it'll tally up the experience points you earn from the stage, as well as what parts you may have found. Once you have found these parts, you can back out of the mission mode and go into the hangar, where you can outfit your mech and your other team's mechs with the weapons that you have found. There is a lot of customization that can be done here, because you are putting parts on the arm, all the different weapons, the body, the legs. There's buff parts you can use to augment stats in your robot, because yes, your mech has stats too. Attack power, defense power, blast defense power, all these things. A lot of customization. And if you're a mech fan, and you have, especially if you haven't played a mech in a while, you know, because we're all still mourning the loss or the lack of armored core, this could be a wet dream for you. Play until your heart's content of customizing your robot. But at the same time, prepare to do that to a rather lackluster story, because the game's plot is told through a series of like scrolling text and turning photos. I genuinely came to not give two shits about the plot. Not that it's like to the game's detriment. There's a lot of people there that also wouldn't care about the plot. They just want to blast things in a robotic mech. And that's fun. But I'm just outright telling that unless you're a fan of reading scrolling text and then like dialogue spoken by faceless characters, and honestly, they're speaking Japanese, and outside of the actual main story sequences, you have no clue what they're even saying. If you don't care about that, you might be out of luck on plot and caring about the you know, Earth's mightiest robot mecha warriors or whatever. But if you want to fight robots, you can take care of it in this game in and of itself, because you will be fighting a lot of robots. There might be a level where it says, hey, defeat 200 robots. And guess what? You'll be out there shooting 200 robots. One thing I don't like, though, about the combat in and of itself is the fact that robots just spawn. The map is fairly large, and you're dashing across it. And out of nowhere, you might just see red dots appear right behind where you just left. And there's no quick turn, at least not that I found. So you have to massively make the robot slowly lunk around to get to facing where you need him to face. And meanwhile, they're just blasting in the butt. You thought you cleared that zone. You thought wrong, because this game thought that spawning robots willy-nilly was a smart idea. So I found that to be kind of annoying, too. But I also was playing on a normal mode, which is actually fairly easy. So I didn't find myself feeling all that challenge. There is definitely harder difficulty, so I'm not saying the game is easy. I'm just saying that normal mode is pretty easy. So just more of an excuse to just customize a bunch of robots and blast burn some jerks. Robo jerks.
The best kind of jerks are robo jerks.
I would have to agree with that statement. Wholeheartedly.
Well, little issues aside, $10 on this one. What do you think of it?
I'd say mostly if you're a mech aficionado, if you're a big fan of this genre of game and you're looking for the next big hit to come out, this isn't it, but it will hold you over and is worth a buy in that regard. If you are, however, a casual mech guy, unfortunately, I would have to deny it or a try it at best, but most likely a deny, because there's likely better games you can buy while waiting for the next big boom.
Makes sense.
Poor mech game.
Well, Purnell, it is always good having you on chatting about these things. Do you have any final thoughts to wrap it up?
Summer still sucks. I came from Florida to Shittown, USA, home of the firebug. I don't like it. It was 104 degrees today in my car. You thought I was going to bring up the weather at the beginning, but I did at the end of the show. At the end of my time on the show. I had to mention it. This weather can kiss my ass. The board games are forever loving. And, I need to mention this before I go. So, last episode, I said I was going on a trip, and we jokingly said, Purnell, maybe you'll find another hot sauce or something. Well, I did. In Savannah, Georgia, I bought a hot sauce called Bootlicker that's infused with tequila. So,
interesting.
And it's delicious. Not intoxicating, because, as you know, usually the alcohol gets cooked out of that kind of stuff. But it's freaking good. And it tastes like Georgia. So I just had to, I had to make sure to point that out, because everyone should have a little hot sauce in their life.
Oh, while you were on your journey, did you ask anyone how to say Lumines?
Actually, the guy I was riding down there with, we were listening to that episode, because I was like, yo, you got to listen to this, because we had a, my friend and I were having a chat on the show about, you know, the pronunciation, and he agreed with me because I told him to. I was like, you guys, it's Lumines. Yeah, man, Lumines. Exactly.
You cheater.
I cheated, and I won, at least with him. I'm pretty sure the actual Twitter group dogpiled me, but I'm only wrong if I'm willing to accept it. And I'm not! So, hey, that's how it goes. I learned from the best.
All right, moving on. Next game to talk about is called Wheel Spin Frenzy, developed and published by Mental Moose Games, released July 6th on Xbox One for $9.99. Wheel Spin Frenzy is a retro racing-inspired game where you can play against AI or split-screen multiplayer with up to four players. Choose from 12 different cars to race with through 20 different tracks spanning four different locations. Simple, arcade-like steering mechanics are sure to be familiar to fans of golden oldies of racing from the 90s. Checking this one out, Jacob Garner. Jacob, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay, Joe. How about you?
Yeah, I'm doing all right. My tooth is kind of fucked. What the fuck was that?
I'm making fun of you. You're like, I'm doing okay.
It's my show. I'm allowed to be whiny. So how are you?
Yeah, I'm okay. I already answered that.
So how's the game then?
Yeah. How is the game?
Well, let's start. So, what is the game?
All right, so Wheel Spin Frenzy, like the description says, it's a retro racing game. If you're familiar with the old Micro Machines games from like the 90s, like you kind of have the idea of it. Although I had way more fun playing the Micro Machines games. But it's like a top-down racer, and like the controls are the same with it. I don't exactly know how to explain it, but essentially your controls move with the viewpoint as you're going around the track. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Cause it's not like a simple, like, you know, forward, you know, like, you know, up is forward and all that kind of stuff. You move with the track. So yeah, it can get a little
fixed overhead camera. So,
right. So if you're not familiar with it, there is going to be a little bit of difficulty getting used to it. But eventually, like, it comes pretty natural. And you can choose what car you're going to be, but of course, when you start, you're only given like two or three different cars to choose from. And you only have three tracks to compete on. And after that, all of the tracks are locked due to various things. Like, you have to place first in the previous thing, or you have to come in the top five, or you have to, you know, you have to
beat
win
a lap, like, the time, something like that.
Right. Stuff like that. And so, that was something I wasn't exactly thrilled with, because, I found the game to be extremely, challenging and difficult, for a number of reasons. There seems to be a ton of customization. There seems to be a lot of tracks going for it, which is really cool. Cause I mean, like, I do appreciate the fact that there's at least like 20 tracks to this game, because like so often you get a racing game, where it's like they threw like a ton of detail into it, but it's only like 5 to 8 different tracks. Yeah. And then they like do cheap stuff where it's like, oh, well, it's at nighttime, or you're doing it mirrored. Like,
yay for mirror mode. Come on,
we know what you're right. Like, we know what you're doing. They actually set out to make all sorts of different tracks, so it's got that going for it. But, the gameplay, it's just like, because the thing is, I don't want to say cheating, all right, because cheating sounds very like dirty and mean and all this other kind of stuff. There is no rubber band AI for this game, so like once you fall behind, you're probably not going to be getting back into first or anything. So finishing first half, like, you know, or even in the top three always felt like dumb luck to me. And on top of it, when you start your race, for some reason, the game has you, hovering in place, and then you get dropped onto the track. Meanwhile, all the AI racers, they all seem to be there. So, like, always, you're going to get shunted just as soon as you start the race, no matter where you start.
Yeah.
and then it's just like, between that and, when you reset your car, it takes, the game takes 3 seconds, if not more. Meanwhile, the AI just automatically resets. So, which, you know, that 3 seconds, that could, you know, that could mean a race.
That could be the difference between seventh place and eighth place.
Or, well, remember the time that we were playing over at your house? Like, I don't remember if I was at your house or my house, but it was like, I was in first, and then it's just like, I got shunted into a tree, and then I finished sixth because of it. Yeah. And it's just like, it's little crap like this, and then it's more like, I found it to be more frustrating than positive. On the plus side, I mean, the controls, like, they make sense. They feel right. I'll give it that. But
I'm going to go and say
they're like really. I'm sorry.
I'm going to go ahead and say that my biggest issue with the game is the handling. It feels like every vehicle is on ice constantly.
Yeah. I mean, like, especially drifting around corners, you might, like, it does feel like you're a bit of a block of ice, but I don't, like, at the same time, like, I've had enough in score, like, I've been in eighth place off of that, you know, at this point, I can just kind of dick around with the game and just do whatever.
Man, your connection is going to shit right now.
You want me to hop off Wi-Fi?
Yeah, I don't know what's going on, but your connection is dog shit. Like, you're crackling up, you're breaking up, you, I don't know, give it a try. Okay, see if it's any better.
All right, give me a second.
I'm keeping all of this. By the way, if anyone heard any bangs earlier, it's because it's the 8th, and people are still shooting off fireworks, so we have that going for us.
Oh, that's fun, too.
Yeah. Okay, so you're back. So
yeah,
handling,
I'm back. Do I handling sound better?
Is so far so good, yes.
Okay, cool.
But yeah, handling is one of my prime complaints with the game, especially because there's no kind of mini map to kind of show you the layout of the track as you're racing it and your position on it. So if you're unfamiliar with the track, you need to be a psychic to know what the turns are going to be so that you can prepare to turn like 2 seconds before the turn shows up, because you're basically sliding on ice the whole time, despite the fact that it's dirt.
Right. And there is also no gauge to tell you how fast you're going. It's you're either just going at top speed or you're crashed into a barn.
Mm-hmm.
Which, admittedly, I also did like that. I did like the destructibility of the maps. I mean, I thought that was a neat feature, but at the same time,
I wish it didn't slow you down so much. Like, the trailer highlighted a lot of smashing fences and plowing into crops and tire piles and everything else, but they slow you down so much. I would have much preferred just, like, plowing through them, watching shit go flying, and continue on with the race.
Right, and it's also one of those things where it's just like, God forbid, you should hit something and then you end up on two wheels, because for whatever reason, the game, like, it'll just leave you on two wheels until you either, like, rebalance yourself and have lost a lot of time, or you'll fall over and lose a lot of time. And then if you decided to reset yourself, you're not necessarily going to get reset near where you were, or, like, advanced far enough so that you're, like, still in fourth place or whatever like that. It's just... I don't know. It's, as I said, the game's more frustrating than fun for me.
It has a lot of potential, though. It's a good-looking game. It's enjoyable when the controls are cooperating with you and the AI aren't being cheating dickheads. And it's fun to plow into things. It's just, I wish the handling was better. I wish it was easier to stay competitive in a race.
Yeah.
I wish there was a mini map so you could tell where you're going on a track, because if you're new to a track, you're going to be last place. There's really no way around it because you don't know which way you're going. Meanwhile, the computer has perfect turning.
Right. Unless, of course, it's crashing into itself, which then everybody will just recover fine anyway.
Yeah.
I did like the tunes to it, as simple as they were. They were pretty catchy, even though it seems like it repeats like the same like 3 or 4 tunes.
It gets the job done.
Yeah, I mean, it has a nice retro feel. Like, you know, it has a nice, it has a nice beat to it. I liked it. I don't know if there's anything else to talk about with it.
It's a game that I would love to see updated and fine-tuned, because I think it has a lot of potential. It's just right now it's not there yet.
I'm a little surprised that there's no, like, Xbox Live capability to it. Like, it's all local.
Yeah.
And, like, granted, like, we had fun playing it local. But at the same time, like, you know, we were still getting our asses kicked by the AI the whole time.
Yeah.
Except, well, you did place first that one race.
Yeah. The fucking miracle on ice, I like to call it.
Yeah. And
no one ever used that term, did they? Miracle on ice?
I don't think so.
Cool.
Fucking miracle on ice.
yeah, the fucking miracle on
ice. you might want to watch out. Like, Brazzers might have copyrighted it by now.
Maybe. If not, they did now.
Honestly, your win is actually the only reason why I have the fourth race unlocked. I'm serious. Like, it's the only reason. It is a supremely difficult game. And yeah. Like, aside from, completing, like, races in first and, like, tournaments and stuff like that, like, the rest of the achievements, like, they're all, like, super grindy. It's like you have to crash into, like, 500 fence posts, take out however many gas stations, like, so many barns and all that other kind of stuff. So, I mean, like, if you're after achievements, like, you know, theoretically, they're simple to do. I mean, you're just going to lose a lot while you do it. But, yeah, I think. Yeah, I don't know. Is there anything else to talk about with it?
No, $10 on this one. What's your verdict?
With my progression in the game, I would be pissed to pay $10 for this game, because I really don't appreciate the fact that all the tracks are locked without, like, you know, like, heck, the one track, if you hadn't placed first in it, I wouldn't have it. I wouldn't have access to it. And there's no way around it. And so I would be stuck having paid $10 for three tracks that I constantly place no better than fifth at.
Yeah.
I don't know how to put it. Like, I mean, if it's on sale. I
think frustrating is a good word.
If it was on sale, I'd be more game for it. But $10 as it is, I wouldn't go for it.
Hey, it makes sense. They can't all be winners. Like I said, I think this one has a lot of potential. Hopefully it gets there someday, because I really wanted to enjoy this one. It's just little differences could change this game for the better in a bunch of different ways.
Agreed. And honestly, it's, you know, for all we know, this thing's going to be like RBI baseball, you know, where it's just like when it gets released, we're like, oh, what is this? And then like a month later, we're like, oh, this is nice. Like,
yeah.
You know, so, yeah, hopefully they do fix it and do more with it.
And if they do update it, we're more than happy to give it a second look on the show. But, Jacob, always good having you on chatting about this stuff. Do you have any final thoughts to wrap it up?
You know, I actually did before we started this, and at this point I forgot everything I was going to say. So, you know, it's standard. No.
All right, next game to talk about is called Mushroom Wars 2, developed and published by Zillion Whales. It released July 5th on the Switch for $19.99. In Mushroom Wars 2, enemy tribes of feisty mushroom creatures face off in short but fierce RTS battles. Step into the shoes of a fearless mushroom commander, choose a hero to lead your army, and take control of the battlefield in a variety of multiplayer modes or challenging story campaign. Checking this one out, Chris Taylor. Chris, how are you doing?
Hey, doing great. Doing fantastic. Not sleepy at all.
how was your Independence Day?
Oh, it was pretty nice. I don't remember much of it, so it must have been good.
Out of tiredness or drunkenness?
No, I don't get drunk. Definitely tiredness. I think we played a card game, Boss Monster. Hmm. Boss Monsters. It's like a dungeon building game.
I got to get more into like card games and board games and stuff like that. I am so out of practice of what's current and what's fun and all that other stuff.
Well, that's a good one. I recommend it. For me, it's hard to get people to get into the same building and do things. So,
yeah, that's my biggest setback as well. Knowing people.
Yeah, exactly. Fortunately, this one's like easy enough to carry around, so you can maybe just have it for when everybody gets stuck somewhere and there's nowhere to charge your phone.
Or charge your Switch.
Exactly. Speaking of, yeah. I'm here to talk about Switch games.
So how is Mushroom Wars 2?
Mushroom Wars 2. This is a really good one. I was, there's, I'd say possibly three genres of video games that I just typically have an intense dislike for, with exceptions, and that would be like sports games and first person shooters and RTSs. And this is definitely an exception.
Well, that is good to hear. I had no idea that you weren't a fan of RTS.
Well, like, yeah, it's just, I like them when they're good. And this one is good. The main thing about it is that it's a little light on the whole resource management thing. It's definitely an RTS built with, like, speed in mind kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And just kind of an ability to get on top of things. So it's not so much like, oh, I haven't gathered enough twigs to build my infantry, and now my soldiers don't have any shields, and the other team has already built dragons. So, you know, it's not really one of those kind of things. For whatever reason, these little mushroom men are both your population, your soldiery, and also your resources. So you just kind of have to keep building mushroom men. And they work for everything. I don't know what that implies about these buildings that look suspiciously like mushrooms, but
buildings of the corpses of your men.
Yeah, dark things are afoot. Actually, funny enough, the beginning cinematic, it doesn't have any words. Like none of the cutscenes have any words, but they like apparently show, I guess, that all life gets exterminated on Earth, but the Earth turns green again, and what replaces all existing life are these mushroom people.
Interesting.
So, mm-hmm. But that's neither here nor there. Basically, what you're doing is going through several. You can do your story campaign to begin with, and you have to do so to learn the game and to unlock enough things to get all the other options. You basically go through many, many tutorial battles. Like, they basically add one in every, like, few levels, and then they let you do a few levels just, you know, kind of giving you a chance to utilize what you just learned. And, like, I've gotten through, like, 20 or 30 of them, and the first part of the game is 189 campaigns, so...
Holy hell.
Yeah, it's pretty beefy. But that's just how it goes. It's like, once you beat one, you're just like, all right, let's get to the next one, and the next one, and the next one. Like, you just really want to keep going, because, you know, you want this stuff to get more interesting. So basically, like, in the gameplay itself, you start with your certain number of buildings highlighted on your team, which by default is the orange team, versus the green team, which is the other assholes that you're trying to destroy for whatever reason.
Good way to put it.
Yeah. And so the way that, you know, you have a couple buildings highlighted and a number that tells you, like, how many mushroom critters you got in that building. And you just move the cursor over to it, highlight it, and push one of the four face buttons to send a certain percentage, up to 100% of the critters in that building, into another building, which will have, if it's a neutral building, it'll be grayed out, and it'll say, like, zero, or it'll, you know, and then whoever you send there, it'll automatically become your building. Or maybe it'll have a 30 over it, so you have to send at least 30 guys over there at once to take it over. And the same goes for the other team. As they fortify their buildings, that's the number of soldiers that you have to fight and have to, you know, send over there, or, you know, just somehow have to dwindle down in order to take over their building. And then whoever owns all the buildings at the end is the winner. So, pretty simple. Like, that's basically the gist of it. Then they introduce in things like towers that shoot at you while you're coming to them, so you have to send enough soldiers to withstand the blast, as well as, you know, actually take over the thing. and they have like forges, which if you take them over, then you're all your soldiers become that much more powerful. Now, the initial buildings and any building that that is not like a special like a tower or a forge or whatever, like your regular mushroom buildings, they are constantly generating more mushroom men. So that's also the trick, is to get those going. And you can also upgrade them in the middle of the battle, and as you upgrade, then they generate men faster. So it's like, do I upgrade or do I send my guys out? You know, what do I do? What's the enemy doing? How am I going to overpower them? And those are all the things that you're sitting there thinking about. And like I said, there's only one resource, at least in the bulk of the game, there's only the one resource. So it becomes like pretty easy, but also really intense. Like you're really working towards it, but there's also, it doesn't have that Warcraftian sense of like not knowing where the enemy is. Like the whole map is always visible. Mm-hmm. Like not knowing where the enemy is, and not, you know, and not like knowing how well they're doing. Like you can always see how well the enemy's doing. So that kind of gives you the ability to strategize. If you have to replay the level, you can be like, oh, I should favor this a little bit more than this time.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it avoids all of the pitfalls that I don't like about RTSs that I think maybe the hardcore RTS people might find missing. But the cool thing about this game, and you know, this is of course the draw of many of the classic RTSs, is that this has online play.
Ooh.
Yeah. So you can actually do 1v1 or 2v2. Any number of ways. Like you can, there's like several modes to choose from. And there's actually one that I really like. You can actually watch, online matches that have nothing to do with you if they've been like highlighted.
Oh, so you can spectate?
Yeah. You can just be a spectator to some other battles. Yeah. I watched a couple before we started. They were pretty intense. These people are way better than me on a game that just came out 4 days ago. But, yeah, so it's ultimately like this is exactly what I like out of an RTS. As a person who really loves video games but is not the kind of brainiac that can stay on top of, you know, your like Warcrafts or your Command and Conquers, whatever, what have you.
So it's more casual but not necessarily easy.
Yes, it's casual and also intense, but not super like you know, dense, I guess you could say.
Yeah, it's approachable.
Yes, that's exactly what
I was looking for.
This is this game is a great way to learn about RTSs if you're not super into them. Like, and all that besides, it's just fun. Like, it's very easy to identify with, and it's very addicting.
Like, nice. So, yeah. $20 on this one. What is your verdict?
Oh yeah, $20 easily. I would have bought this if it had a physical version. Or, you know, like 30 or whatever. Like, I think it's one of those types of games that you would seek out.
Nice. Sounds good.
Yeah, I hope so.
All right, next game to talk about is called Miles in Kilo, developed and published by Four Horses. It released July 5th on the Switch for $7.99. Whilst out for a fight with his dog Kilo, Miles gets trapped in a storm when a mysterious character appears and causes them to crash land on a haunted island. To make matters worse, this character and his cronies steal various vital parts of Miles' plane. Run, jump, bounce, swing, roll, surf, crash, smash, and hop your way through 36 challenging levels across 5 beautiful hand-drawn worlds. Chris, tell us about Miles and Kilo.
Hooray! So this is a sequel of basically of sorts to a game that was out on 3DS and I think a couple of other systems called Kid Trip. And what Kid Trip was is it was basically an automatic runner game. I'm not sure what you call those in the genre. It's where your character is constantly moving and your job is just to jump and to make sure that they get out of all the obstacles.
Just an auto runner. That's what I've always called them.
Yeah, like that's what it is. It's just an automatic running platformer. So that game, and that was a really cool game, I thought. I bought it a long time ago and started playing it. And so it's nice to see this much better updated version. So they upgraded the graphics to be a little bit more, I would say, 16-bit in tone versus the 8-bit Kid Trip looking thing. And now it's actually kind of split up. You basically either play as Miles the boy, or which he actually has full range of motion, so you can run around with him, and it's like a standard platformer. Or halfway through the stage, or just in some special stages, you run into Kilo, who is your dog, that you you grab his collar, and he drags you behind him, and then it becomes an automatic runner game, where you have like your dog basically serving as the runner. Now, interestingly, they actually left in the option in the menu to make this an automatic runner game, period. So you could just turn on auto run, and then it plays exactly like Kid Trip.
Nice.
So it's cool that they did that. So quite serendipitously, I'm playing this game right after the first time I beat Adventure Island, and this is basically exactly like an updated Adventure Island. So on top of like having the full range of running around and collecting things, which you you collect things basically to get a better score at the end of the level. There's several factors upon which you're judged, and I'll get back to that in a minute. The thing that they've added into this one is that you can also throw fruit at your enemies to get them out of the way, but the fruit you collect by jumping at it is just like any platformer, MacGuffin, but you have 5 fruits that you can throw, and they have to be refilled that way. So you have limited ammo, but it's like being constantly like basically refilled by the stage, if the stage allows. So
yeah,
that's a really interesting part of it too. And it's basically so what essentially motivates you to get through these stages really quickly is that you're judged on time, the amount of coins that you pick up, and let's see, what was the other one? just the amount of fruit in your inventory whenever you get to the end. So the actual time rating, in order to get that highlighted, it's usually the kind of time within about a half second of simply just running right through the level at top speed. So turning on the auto run feature is actually beneficial in that sense, because it gives you a good sense of how you're supposed to get past these obstacles, because you're supposed to be constantly moving. And then it gives you, your letter rating. I actually did get an S rating in a level or two, which is really fun. But that doesn't seem to really affect the game at large. So this is just for people who want to challenge themselves further, which is kind of nice. The stages are broken up into basically it's Adventure Island style. It's like you, in every stage, there's maybe like a outside sort of tropical land, because, crashed a plane into a tropical island, so it's got that. And then you wind up in caves, you wind up in temples. And then this one also introduces boss battles that are really super interesting. They basically, like, the first one you fight with the dog, and so the dog controls a little bit different than the boy, in the sense that he, when he's running, instead of throwing fruit, he can lock onto a target and then fling himself at them like a cannonball kind of thing. Yeah, it's pretty nice. Funny to watch. And when you do that, you can actually bounce off the enemies, and that's how you have to do some of the platforming, is to like kind of bounce off the heads of enemies or run into them using the target system, which actually reminds me a lot of Ninja Smasher or Ninja Striker, which is a different game, I think, developed by somebody completely different. So coincidence. The boss fights usually involve you trying to do damage to the boss in some way that utilizes the platforming in a really tricky way. And the second boss is super hard. So this game does get pretty challenging, but I really think that people shouldn't be intimidated by this one. It's just, it's a really skillful platformer, and it's very pretty, and it has a great 8-bit soundtrack. A winner all around, I say.
Cool. So $8 on it. What do you think?
Yeah, definitely get it, especially if you're into Adventure Island, but with a lot more polish, like any of those kind of like challenging platformers, but with, infinite lives and all that other stuff, the stuff that we enjoy nowadays in a post-password society.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Yep.
All right. Anyway, final game to talk about with you is called Philippix, Phil's Epic Adventure, developed and published by Lightwood Games. It's releasing July 12th on the Switch for $7.99. Philippix is a new picture logic puzzle from the makers of Pick-A-Pix Deluxe, but with huge scrollable puzzles up to 100 squares wide, you'll reveal pictures much larger and more detailed than ever before. Chris, what is this game?
Oh boy, so Philippix. I just learned how to play this. I didn't learn how to say it. So yeah, I reviewed their prior game on the PS4, which we had mentioned that it's basically a what do you call it? Like a Picross kind of style of game. Yeah, only. You know, this other one introduced the concept of colors. This one actually it's got a whole different thing going for it. So in a general game of Picross, you have your grid of stuff, and then you have your numbers flanking the grid, like outside of both the up and down side, and you're supposed to basically use math to determine based on those numbers where you're supposed to fill in a square, and based on that you get, you know, a lovely picture. And this game is no different. It does not make any apologies. In fact, the protagonist, I guess, of the game, well, I guess it's you, but the person you're talking to, I guess Phil, some dude whose house you have visited, is already helping himself to, like, coffee and cookies. So he's just like, just try and get through this one, motherfucker.
That'd be great if the game said that to you.
Right, especially with that big smile and stuff.
E-rated puzzle game, come on, motherfucker.
I was going to say, yeah, apologies to the E-rated folks who came here expecting a family-friendly review.
I don't think anyone has ever come to my show expecting anything family-friendly.
Yeah, so your cookie-dustered relative? Older male friend? His story is that he has brought back several pictures, but his development process is slow. You have to develop these pictures by hand, pixel by pixel. Makes it sound like it's not picture development at all, but anyway.
But a puzzle game, gee.
It is a puzzle game. so this one, just like the other one, it introduces a whole new concept in the Picross formula. And besides the fact that the puzzles are gigantic, it actually, the numbers get down and dirty and right into the picture. So, what happens is that basically the numbers are all inside of the grid, and you're supposed to take it, every number, the rule is that every single number, around it, in the nine squares around it, so three on each side, you know, or just like one of, you know, a little circle.
Three by three circle.
Yes, square, that's right, not a circle. Every 3x3 square, that number will tell you how many of the nine that square will be filled. So
it's like a reverse Minesweeper.
Exactly, yeah. So, you know, you see a six, that means that six of those nine are to be filled in, and the way you determine which of those is to look at the next number, and, you know, you sort of build on clues. So generally your strategy would be to find anything that has zero, which will be your blank spaces, and start filling those in, and that will eliminate, you know, that will definitely eliminate enough blank spaces in order to, because you either fill it in with a color. This one's actually just two-tone. It's just black. Either black or grayed out with a little X. And and the number itself will fade out if you've reached the correct amount of spaces, but it won't tell you whether those spaces are correct. It'll just, as long as you've met the criteria, the number will fade out. And if you've gone over, then it will turn red. Uh-huh. So basically, you can sit there and, like, just fill in stuff until everything is grayed out, and then be like, okay, that's probably it. and the game does provide you with unlimited hints. That is to say, it will tell you where generally would be the best place to start trying to fill in squares on the bigger map, because the actual playing field is not close to the size of the actual map. So you'll end up scrolling a lot, going through different spaces. But it'll tell you like generally where would be a good place to explore. And then you can also have it search the board for mistakes, and you can choose to fix the mistakes if it finds them. So it's like, you've made 12 mistakes, how dare you? And you can say fix, and it'll make them all go away, and then you can just keep doing the puzzle. It won't solve the puzzle for you, but it will, like, every step of the way tell you what you might have done wrong until, by process of elimination, you can finally complete this monstrous thing. Because these puzzles are giant versus that other game. I am not even kidding. Yeah, they're huge. Like, you really get into there, and they look intimidating. Fortunately, the music is extremely pleasant, so... And, you know, Phil's always staring at you from behind that picture, that playing field with his cookie and his coffee.
That pretentious prick just staring at you.
Yeah, he's just always smiling at you. Like, yeah, it's not so easy, is it? So yeah, there's all kinds of puzzles. As far as I could tell, they're all accessible. You don't have to start anywhere particular. You just be like, oh, Japan, okay, cool, or France or Germany or whatever. And oh my god, there are dozens of puzzles. This, like, each puzzle, and that's one thing I forgot to mention, is that if you can get through the whole puzzle without using the fix option, you get a prize, like you get a trophy or something, or a star. So that kind of motivates you to try and do it the right way without just cheesing the hint system. Because you can't just, like, cheese the hint system and then do it again and, like, have it memorized, because... Yeah. The pictures are too big for that. So it's one of those things where, like, this is a game where one puzzle could probably take you all day, if not into the next day. You might even start a couple and just move on to the other one when one starts to frustrate you.
Damn.
Like, yeah, and then, like, by my view, there are easily over 100 of these puzzles. So
I know I've done some of their longer, bigger puzzles in Linepicks, and I think I took over an hour for one of them, and I was still working on it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, this one, like, I was just working on the first one that I came across, and it was just like, felt like the whole afternoon. So,
damn.
Yeah.
So you get your money's worth with this one, huh?
Oh, absolutely. If you are, unless you're some kind of like, tortured genius, then you'll really get your money's worth out of this game. And if you are a tortured genius, then I'm sorry about the torture.
Well, but $8 on this one. What do you think of it?
Assuming that your level of genius is somewhere below tortured, then yes, this is well worth the money. It's really challenging and it is fun. I think it's fun to solve puzzles, and, you know, number puzzles are great for, you know, your mental acuity and things like that. So, you know, go do it. Make your brain bigger.
Awesome. I have most of Lightwood's games. I might have to pick this one up as well. It looked intimidating when I saw pictures of it. So
it is. So, and there are some tutorial stages, by the way. So
that's good.
Make sure to utilize those, and you know, that asshole Phil will tell you what to do.
Fucking so, Phil.
Yeah, you should be pretty well prepared to get into this puzzle and get your hands dirty once you get through the tutorial.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Well, Chris, always good having you on chatting about these things. Do you have any final thoughts to sum it up?
Phil, you asshole.
Our next game to talk about is called Mace, developed and published by Entwickler X, released June 29th on Xbox One for $4.99. Mace, M-A-C-E, is a classic 2D space shooter game. The player navigates a spaceship across three different worlds with six vertically scrolling levels and various enemies trying to destroy or avoid them. Checking this one out, the master of all things shooter, Scott Carnage Smith. How are you doing?
Hey, what's up, Joe? How's it going? Yeah, pretty good.
Going pretty okay. How are things with you?
Yeah, can't complain. Except I can't think of any good puns right now yet.
Yet. Thank God.
Yet.
Thank God. So what is Mace?
Okay, so Mace is as you mentioned, it's basically a traditional style shmup, and you know, you can basically move left, right, forward, back. It's not a twin stick shooter, surprisingly. I'm playing something that's other than a twin stick. It is a shoot 'em up, though. But it's more like a, I think, Amiga style, or like really old school style shmup. I think that's what they're inspired by, from what I've read somewhere. But you know, from what I played a little, couple hours of, it is a really cool, game so far. Shit, could we restart? That's a shitty start.
No, now I'm keeping all of it.
Now that you fucked up, words
specifically because you fucked up and want to start over, I'm keeping all of it.
No do-overs. Otherwise, you can spray me with mace through the computer somehow, because this game is mace.
See,
you
had a pun. We can't leave the pun.
There we go. There we go.
It feels better.
So anyway, yeah, all better. So yeah, hopefully this game is better than the way I'm talking right now, because I can't get my words out for some reason. But yeah, the game is fun so far. And all joking aside, the you know, if you like shmups, this is definitely going to be up your alley. It's got three worlds. I think there are three different three worlds, and then there are like about six levels, I think, in each world. And there's a good amount of variety in the enemies, power ups that you can pick up. You can also use your bomb. You'll collect various various pickups. You fire with the A button. You can move around, switch weapons. Depending on the power ups, you could actually have multiple weapons all at the same time. It's just swapping between them, kind of like just switching between them, but you can upgrade them by collecting more of the same power up, so to speak. So yeah, that's, there's a lot of depth with the different weapons. You could even do local co-op. Unfortunately, no online, but there is two player.
That's always good. Local's always good.
Especially in a $5 game. That's the other thing I wanted to mention, that this is only a $5 game. So what you get here is actually, the levels are pretty long, too. So you get, like, three worlds. Like I said, six levels in each world. So that's 18 levels. I don't suck at math. At least I suck my words, but I don't suck with math. So, yeah, and also at the top of the screen, you'll see you basically, just like old school style, you have extra lives. You can collect one-ups. There are checkpoints. It's not that old school, like where, you fuck up and you're game over. It's not that evil, but there is, high score incentives as well. There's the only thing, though, is I don't think I found leaderboards. So that's kind of a little bummer in a shmup. You definitely want some kind of extra thing. Besides, there are the achievements, which is cool. I think most of them are pretty easy to get.
How'd you do with them?
Even if you're not a like a hardcore shmup player, this is not a Japanese bullet hell be all end all thing. But basically, I'd say I got, I think, 700 or so out of it, or 800, just in maybe hour or two,
Pretty good.
Just by getting through, on easy difficulty. You could even get the achievements. There are, I think, one or two achievements for getting a certain score, and you can't do it even if you perfect it on easy and you don't get hit and you kill everything. So you have to play it on hard if you want to get all the extra points. And then there's another achievement that I don't have. You have to collect, I think, full upgrades of all the power-ups. So that'll be a little tricky if you miss something. You have to try to make sure you pick the right power-up for the weapons that you need more of, to upgrade them fully. The thing about the no leaderboards, that's the one main gripe I have with this game. I know for $5, you can't really complain about a game too much, but especially when I'm enjoying it and it's fun. But like for a shmup, you want to compete with your friends, right?
Yeah.
So it's kind of a little bummer. Like, that would be nice for them to add that, I think.
Well, maybe in the future it'll happen.
Yeah, possibly. Overall, I think the game is, I'm enjoying it so far. I haven't even made it through the whole game yet. I got through the second world. There's still one more world to go. There's a good amount of variety with the enemies from what I've seen so far, and the graphics. They're nothing amazing, but it changes the variety throughout the three worlds. So
nice. So $5 on this game. What is your verdict?
For $5, I would say any shmup fan would definitely should definitely buy this game. For anyone that, like, unless you really hate shmups with a passion for some reason, and you're that crazy guy out there or girl, then don't go with it, because this won't change your mind. You know, it's more of a, it's just another type of, I wouldn't say generic, but it doesn't bring a lot of new stuff to the table, but it is fun. So I wouldn't get it if you hate shmups, but if you're on the fence about it and you like shmups to some degree, definitely buy it for $5.
Yeah, it's $5. Fuck it, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Good stuff. Well, Scott, always good having you on chatting about this stuff. Do you have any final thoughts to wrap it up, or a final pun, I guess?
Well, I was going to think of a Mace or Nas song. Remember Mace?
Oh God, yeah. I do.
I don't remember any though. So too bad. You could just spray me in the face with mace if you ever meet me. Hey, that rhymes. I can make my own rap. Spray me in the face with mace. Yo, spray me in the face with mace. Get up out of this place. The review is over.
Sugar, spice, and everything nice. These were the ingredients chosen to create the perfect little girl. But Professor Utonium accidentally added an extra ingredient to the concoction. Chemical X. Thus, the Powerpuff Girls were born.
Using their ultra superpowers, Blossom, Bubbles, and Buttercup have dedicated their lives to fighting crime and the forces of evil.